I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
An emotional evening at the Etihad, saying farewell to an all-time Manchester City and Premier League great. Did quite a lot to blow the cobwebs away after a disappointing FA Cup final. The 3-1 win over Bournemouth has left the club in a very healthy position in their push to play in next season's Champions League, even if defeat at Wembley means a season without silverware. Also, funny what's considered an obvious goal-scoring opportunity on a Tuesday compared to what's an obvious goal-scoring opportunity on a Saturday, isn't it? Anyway, just a thought. We'll discuss those two matches shortly on this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Plus, it's our final proper show of the season before next week's live episode. So you know what that means? It's time to boot up the alternative highlights. We'll hear some of the best bits you'd forgotten about from the second half of the campaign a little bit later on. A point at Fulham will confirm a top five finish, so we'll preview that match in a bit as well. And we've also got a little bit of a changing cast this week. So I'm David Mooney. I'm joined by City fan Richard Burns.
Hi David, how are you?
Not too bad, thank you, not too bad. And for the first part of today's show, we've got The Athletic's John McKenzie. Hi John.
Hi, how's it going?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. Now then, we're going to dive straight into the analysis of the games because obviously two quite important games for City this week. John, I'm interested to get your take on this as a non-City fan to start with, because people were quite down about the FA Cup performance. And I felt it was pretty good. And I thought, okay, maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe you know, perceived wisdom is the correct thing here. And then I watched the Bournemouth game. And I kept, all the way through it, I just kept thinking, I think City were better on Saturday.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, the context of this game is that Palace came to sit in and low block. And yeah, I think in those contexts, the question has to be, how many chances do you create? How many decent open play chances do you fashion? And I think City did well. They created over two expected goals. There was at least two or three chances in the box, I think, where they opened up space and found that space. They inhabited that space with players. There were a couple of times I think Nico O'Reilly didn't quite get his feet sorted out, and so those won't have registered either. A penalty miss, I think you get to the end of a game like that and you just think, you know, it's one of those ones where it's not your day. So yeah, I think that's the context within which everything has to be talked about. Now, of course, there's always, you know, you can always be picky and have conversations about how maybe they could have made those fine margins even more advantageous. Mm. But I do think that these kind of games always end up being analysed with the scoreline providing the background to the criticisms rather than the actual reality of what the team who didn't score did. So, yeah, I felt it was pretty good too. There's things about it that I didn't like, but I also think that it would be cruel to use the scoreline as a stick to beat them with.
Yeah, Richard. That said, doesn't make the journey home from Wembley any easier, does it?
No, I think, like, I agree that it's so easy to use the score to sort of backfill the narrative, and obviously, like, part of what we've got to do is, like, is not do that and sort of look at the game on the whole. And I think pretty good is a fair way to describe the performance. But I suppose that's also, like, the problem. Like, it was pretty good. Like, it's a bit of a... I don't know if this is too harsh. It's almost like it's a bit of a shoulder shrug, isn't it? To come away from an FA Cup final have been pretty good and lost it when the other team have turned up and executed their game plan and won it. Like, there's a bit of a juxtaposition in, like, City were the better team in the sense of City dominated play. They had maybe not loads of clear-cut chances, but they definitely, I mean, clearly there was a penalty. They forced Henderson into some saves. They had an outrageous amount of possession. But Palace had a chance and a goal and they win the game. And that's sort of what they came for. They had that in the back pocket early and were able to... Well, I mean, I'm not suggesting they played the game to only have one chance, of course. But they were there to defend and to nullify City. And they largely shut off space and made it very frustrating. And that's a lot of what City have been this season. It's at times it can look quite passive. And so I can understand why you can read that as and it's not a pretty good performance, because I guess it sort of highlights some of the problems that City have got as well. And it doesn't make it a bad performance, but it ultimately doesn't do the job. But in terms of the trip home from Wembley, in some ways to me it does make it easier, because it was a fair result. I'm sure we'll talk about an unfair element of it, but overall it's a result that I wasn't dejected by. And so I find that kind of game, I find myself disappointed, not devastated. Mm. And that is helped by the opposition not being one of our major rivals, to be fair.
The other side of this, John, as well, is that Palace offered very little threat in the game overall, apart from like one moment when they got up the pitch and scored, and one moment where they got up the pitch and forced Ortega into a save. Is this a case of Palace sitting in with that low block, not having much ambition because they've got the lead? Or is it a case of City not allowing them to get out there? And it's very easy to go, City need to be a bit more adventurous in this game. And they need to you don't need to be as secure because Palace aren't offering anything. But is the reason Palace aren't offering anything because City are so secure?
I think that you have to recognise that football is a relative game, so there's two teams playing on the pitch at any one time. And I think a lot of the things that we talk about when we're thinking about tactical advantages are, how do you take the ball from one end of the pitch, move it to the other and generate chances for yourself? Now, when you're playing against a team who are going to sit in, regardless of what you do, in many respects, that sort of evacuates a lot of the tactical discussion, I think, because you end up then not having to worry about build-up, not having to worry too much about ball progression. You're then worrying about how do we break down a low block, and then how do we mitigate the fact that we're giving up a lot of space behind us that the opponents can hit. And, that's been the equation for the whole of Pep Guardiola's tenure at Manchester City, right? That's the way he wants to play the game, because it's a way that I think favours a better team. If you can consistently hold territorial dominance, and you can what you're doing by doing that is making the chances that you're going to create harder to score, and the chances that the opposition are going to create easier to score, because there's more space for them to score in, although they are obviously a long way away from the goal when they receive the ball. It then comes down to volume, right? And the question is, if you've got elite players like City have, you take that volume gamble. You say, we're going to create more chances than the opposition. Yes, they're going to be lower quality chances. And they're going to have bigger quality chances if they manage any, but we're going to try and reduce those to a minimum. And for the most part, you're getting 70% wins out of that approach. That's what Pep Guardiola's had across his career, a 70% win percentage across all games. Now, this season has been slightly different, because it feels as though maybe that needle has swung a little bit in favour of teams sitting deeper and hitting and having plans of how to cause them problems on the counter, right? And it's hard to know why that is, whether or not it's because the personnel have aged out a little bit, whether or not it's because the oppositions have got so much more talented players who can play in those transitional moments, or whether or not it's just because structurally at this point in time in football, it's the win percentage is just going to drop down. It's a less effective way of winning. I don't know. We'll find out in the next few seasons. But I think with that in mind, I think Pep will just view that game as, you know, that's one of the 3 out of 10 games that doesn't go your way. And I mean, he came out after the game and said, you know, we did everything we could to win the game. We did enough to win the game. And I think you have to sort of be pragmatic about it in that sense. I think when people start expecting him to sort of reinvent the wheel in those sorts of fixtures, it's maybe a little bit unrealistic. And yeah, for me, that's just Palace were going to sit deep, right? Whatever formation you played, if you played with wing-backs offering width and narrow forwards, which is what you've been doing in recent months, you're not going to get the advantages of that, because there's no space to attack still. So yeah, for me, the big question, I think, tactically is, Could they have defended the space better? They gave up that chance. It was obviously the first chance Palace had on goal. Arguably, like, yeah, coming through the wide, down the wide areas, not defending it particularly well because you're using Nico O'Reilly to come inside. But I don't know. I just kind of feel like everything's just gone perfectly for them in that moment. And the chance itself is a low quality chance, right? Which is made more valuable by the fact that it's a Berriezer on the ball. So yeah, I mean, I'm talking around the houses a little bit here, but like the point that I'm wanting to make is that I think the expectation that City do something different has to be viewed within the context of the fact that Palace were going to sit deep, whatever. And so the main questions were, one, how do you break down the block? And I think that's not really so much a tactical question as a sort of like problem solving exercise in the moment, right, with the players that you have there. Like, they're not doing things that Guardiola is going to tell them to do in that moment. And then the other thing is being able to defend those chances. And in the end, I think, you know, they largely defended pretty well. So yeah, the questions, I think the tactical questions have to boil down to those two areas in particular.
Yeah, Richard, for ultimately for that game, is the answer just simply, you just got to finish better? Like, you get given a free shot at goal from the penalty spot, you just got to put it in.
I mean, yeah, like, realistically, if City take the chances, then yeah, of course they win the game because they did have chances. Sort of can't say that without acknowledging the penalty. That in itself, like, it's on target, so it requires a save from the goalkeeper. Penalties are very easy to overanalyze, but ultimately, if you like, there's always a chance the goalkeeper goes the wrong way. Obviously, Henderson said what he said after the game about his pre-analysis and knowing which way Marmoush was going to go. So,
bit weird. Haaland didn't take it.
Yeah, very weird. I mean, he's the penalty taker, so I try to stay away. And you will know, like, I'm often something of a fence sitter, so I try to stay away from like assuming things or getting into what somebody's mentality is. But there was a lot of talk after the game of Haaland bottling it, and it's, other than suddenly becoming very charitable during an FA Cup final and thinking I'll let my teammate have a go, like, it's hard to understand what reason other than not being confident himself, why he would give up a penalty. He's sort of the star man, star striker, there to score goals. There is no clearer chance, and I say this knowing City's record, but in theory, there is no clearer or like purer chance of scoring a goal than having a penalty. It's like the ultimate one-on-one, isn't it? And everything favours the attacker. So for...
I am by no means a good footballer, but I don't understand how hard it can be to score a penalty. I just don't. Like, I'm not. I surely you can just score it.
I cannot work out, and we'll never know until he explains it himself, if he ever does, what goes on in your penalty taker's head to turn it down in a cup final. And I'm so wary of just like saying the same things everybody else does, because I hate doing that when it all, like, so much of it is so reductive. It is that sort of bottled it language. But it's like, for once, I find it quite hard to get away from that is probably what's happened. Is because why would you give it up if it's not a confidence thing?
You contrast it to when he took that penalty in the first season with City at Palace, and they asked him afterwards, "What were you thinking about?" While you're waiting for it, he was like, "I was thinking what celebration I was going
to
do."
But even contrast it to a penalty he took in the same week last year, Spurs away, to wrap up. Yeah. Well, not. So I was going to say wrap up the title, obviously not, to give City a huge advantage going into the final day of the season and seal the game. Obviously, you know, he'd already scored in that game, so I guess feeling confident. But it's just. It's a frustrating thing because it does leave that what if element. Like, what if he takes that? Very, very good chance. It's a different outcome. But it's not the only chance that we had in the game. There were other chances we didn't take. Henderson made some good saves. There was a good one from Docker. I think there was one early on, wasn't there, from Haaland with the sort of, maybe not, I don't think I've seen this one back. I think a bit of an outstretched leg and maybe not a super clear-cut chance, but one that looked like a good save from Henderson. Yeah, and I think your question was, is it as simply City take the chances they win? Again, it's maybe a little bit of a blunt way of looking at it, but they had more chances. So I guess that defines the answer as sort of yes by default, isn't it?
Yeah. John, when you kind of wrap the two performances together, the one against Bournemouth and the one against Palace, Bournemouth was a bit odd, because I find Bournemouth a very dangerous team for City to play against. And City, I mean, you tweeted about just the bozo nature of the way that City have been performing in individual moments. Again, I thought City were pretty good for the whole of the 90 minutes, apart from just individuals just doing stupid things from time to time.
Yeah, it's been ridiculous this season, I think, not least because I think in the past, if you look at the clubs that the teams that Guardiola has coached, they're so good at like the details. And it's you know, the stuff that like any Premier League centre back will know how to do in their sleep, but City, like they hit that to the utmost level, and it's just surprising to see that when a manager who is so detail focused have his team just sort of doing. I mean, it's happened all the way across the pitch, right? I always think of the goal against the concession against Manchester United for them to win in that game, where you know there's just sloppiness from like a couple of players, indecisions between Bernardo Silva and Foden and Haaland about who's responsible for pressing. So no pressure on the ball carrier, so they can get a ball in behind. And I think Guardiola defending out in wide spaces like can sometimes be a little bit suspect. Backline behaviour stuff, so knowing when to drop the back line, knowing when to step the back line up, stuff like that has usually been so metronomic for City, and it hasn't this season. And two bozo moments in the game, one which led to a red card and one which led to a late goal concession again. And
I honestly thought Diaz was going to get sent off in the second one, and just I thought they were both going to be red cards, and I was just like, this is like, we can't keep doing this.
yeah and it's the fine line nature of modern football. You can't afford to give these opportunities to the opposition, because they will take them. Now the Premier League is such a high standard that you give any player in that league the chance to get an advantage, and they will take it. So I think that's definitely something I think needs to be worked on next season. I think personnel
get a handle on what you expect to see for City from next season from these two games? Because it feels these two games, like, as much as City lost the cup final and there were individual errors against Bournemouth, it feels like the two performances built on the recent form that City have had, it feels like they're building towards something. I'm just not really sure what at the moment.
Yeah, very different games, right? Because you saw the two systems that have been used this season. So the 3-1-6, where against Palace, where you're just trying to stretch that back line out, create space, find pockets. You don't need to worry too much about like keeping players back. But then against Bournemouth, using the same system that cooked Bournemouth in the FA Cup, where you've got the width coming from the fullbacks, and you know, you keep your forwards narrow, so you squeeze their back line really tight. And I think against a team like Bournemouth, who are going to try and push up, you end up finding these like really dynamic plays in the wide areas. And I think, you know, just slowly pick them apart using the width in that way. Again, like, that's very dependent on the way that the team come out and approach you. So I think we'll probably see a mixture of the two. I'm really interested to see what City do in the summer with respect to bringing in fullbacks, because last season they tried the fullback, like the sort of more traditional fullback profiles with Guardiola and Walker, and I just didn't think it worked particularly well. And yeah, this season they've done it with Nico O'Reilly and Matheus Nunes, right, who are you know, makeshift fullbacks at best. And I think, you know, Nico O'Reilly's great, I think, in attacking moments, not so great going back. I think Nunes has been okay, but yeah, has bozo moments in him. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if City do actually go for sort of classic flying fullback profiles, because I think that's definitely the way that football is going now, where everyone is blocking out in the middle, and so if you can find ways of generating advantages in wide areas through fullbacks, it makes a difference. And I think the thing for me is that obviously, I think Guardiola's come out a few times this season and said, like, I've always used wingers to generate width in the past. But it's getting to a point now where Premier League set sides are so adept at defending against wingers, so that even when you've got Jeremy Doku, who gets, you know, 200 completed dribbles every game, they don't really seem to be that advantageous anymore, because teams know, I think, exactly how to defend those moments. So I think part of the interesting thing for this season has been seeing them use those fullbacks to great effect. I think the goals against Bournemouth in the FA Cup were great examples of that, right, with Nico O'Reilly going in around the side and being able to play the ball to the back post for Haaland to finish. So I think we'll probably start seeing Guardiola finding ways of generating upside in wide areas more, even though in the past it's always been like generating chances through the middle. So yeah, that would be what I'd be keeping my eyes on.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now, Richard, I referenced it in the intro. I am at no point going to suggest that Mateo Kovacic should not have been sent off for the foul that he made in that game against Bournemouth. However, it does seem a little bit funny that a foul just over the halfway line there is such an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, and a handball when you've got Erling Haaland taking control of the ball on the edge of the box isn't.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I've not seen the Kovacic one back, and for how reliable a view I had of it, I thought it was Gundogan. So as I
well, text you put it on WhatsApp group Gundogan, and I was like, has he? What, like, has he subbed him off? Is that what this is?
Yeah, I was very proud of myself, and then to be fair, I was partly fooled by going back in time and seeing the number 8 and thinking Gundogan. Oh, shit, no, he's not number 8 anymore. Yeah, I mean, I suppose with the Kovacic one, I wouldn't particularly argue it. Could maybe argue with the distance that there's a chance for covering defenders to get back and all of that stuff.
We learned from the goal that Bournemouth did score that Diaz has not got the pace to get
well,
back there.
Yeah, fair. Like I said, I know my first reaction was he's going to get sent off for that. He got sent off for it. I had no complaint. But the incident in the FA Cup final had lots of complaint. I think before, I will heavily caveat this with, I do not in any way blame the decision or blame the outcome of the game on the decision. If anything, a red card for Palace would have further entrenched them having to defend and work into shut off space. And they already had the goal that that they needed. So, you know, they wouldn't have had like any further reduced attacking potency. So that's my caveat. I cannot get my head around how that is not a red card offence, and the fact that it's a VAR decision just makes it all the more frustrating.
I don't blame the officials on the field for not seeing it either, to be honest.
I was just going to say I didn't know what it was being checked for, and granted we're sort of other end of Wembley, so like very hard to see an incident like that particularly clearly, but yeah, I've no problem with the referee not seeing that in real time, but VAR is there to correct that kind of thing, and I absolutely understand, and in many ways I'm on board with like some of the nuances of VAR, like it can't give, you know, go back and give the free kick, it can't give a yellow card, fine, because you don't want to get into a position where VAR can just re-review every single decision in a game. I get all of that. The interpretation to say it's not denial of a goal scoring opportunity, when if Henderson doesn't stretch his hand out of the box and swat the ball away, the only logical, or the only reasonable thing to assume, is that Haaland gets the next touch. And that next touch, because of physics, that next touch takes it past Henderson. And obviously, you can't account for what happens after that. Maybe Haaland misses. It's very, very possible. But
it's not denying a goal, is it?
No, it's not. That doesn't change the fact that that's a clear goal-scoring opportunity. And the reason he moves so far away from goal is because that's where Henderson handballs it to. And so, in effect, you create this loop where the reason it's not an offence is because of the offence. It's like I've been trying to think of like some sort of metaphor or comparison in like actual law, and I can't. Like, the only thing I can come to is like, if I was caught speeding and then I get away with it because I needed to speed. I don't know. Like, it's like the offence becomes the justification for it not being an offence. It's just, it's bizarre.
It's that old dictionary definition, isn't it? Circular definition, C definition, circular.
Yeah, very good. It's very frustrating. It leaves you with the sense of they've made a cup final decision. They've made an occasion-based decision. It wouldn't be the first time that that would be an accusation you could level at officials in a cup final. The one that always springs to my mind is Villa versus Manchester United. I think, was it United avoided a red card quite early on and went on to win the League Cup?
Yeah.
Which I think like everybody accepted was like dictionary definition red card. And it just becomes like, did they not want to spoil the occasion and all that kind of thing? Which is, it's a bit of a sour taste. Like I say, you know, I don't really believe it would have changed the outcome of the game. But of course you can get onto, well, Henderson wouldn't have been the goalkeeper on the field to save the penalty. So it's not nothing either. It's not inconsequential.
This is the irony of VAR though, right? It's like, it almost becomes self, like, contradictory in that the whole point of VAR is for these moments, right?
Well, this is the thing.
This is the big moment that everyone's like, an injustice could be committed. And it's committed, and that's it. And it's like the amount of bullshit we have to go through as football fans watching completely unimportant moments being pontificated over by VAR, with the justification being, yeah, but what about in those moments where it really matters? Those moments really matter, and it doesn't happen, and it's just contradictory all the way down. And it always happens this way. So yeah, I think it's just one of the most ridiculous decisions I've ever seen. Justifying it with this language of the direction the ball was heading in, when the ball heading in that direction was the crime. That was the crime that was committed. So yeah, I think ridiculous from VAR there.
It's about what you can and can't prove, isn't it? And the fascinating thing I always see is like no matter what footage you show someone, there is always going to be an element of doubt. Like Henderson could come out afterwards and say, "Yeah, I did it, and I intended to do it, and I confess entirely to this." And it's like, yeah, but did he mean it?
Did you hear Henderson's interview after the game? I heard his TalkSport one. I wouldn't normally, but we sort of just put it on and left it on the way home. And yeah, I found him quite convincing in his like not realizing he was outside of the box and sort of not realizing that the VAR review was even about him. I can absolutely buy his idea that he thought the ball was going to skip through to him and he panicked and swatted it away.
Mate, I've wiped forwards out as they've come through one-on-one and claimed I've got the ball with such conviction that I've convinced myself about it. Nah.
I mean, fair enough. I could buy it. It was more not the nature of the excuse. It was more the sort of intonation of his voice when he asked the reporter, "Was I outside of the box?"
Really, me?
Oh. But I mean, like I said, I mean, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference, really, does it?
John, let's give a word to Omar Mamouche this week, because yes, obviously missed the penalty, and we've discussed about whether he should have been taking it or not. But then, listen, fair play that finish against Bournemouth. I'm not convinced it was the right decision to take the shot on there, but fair play.
Yeah, and he's been a fantastic ball striker, you know, since he's arrived, and I think it's needed, right? It feels like for all the genius that he's given us through the years, Kevin De Bruyne isn't about that anymore. And I think that as you know, with the background of everything we've said about, if you're going to come up against low blocks, Those are the sorts of players you need to bring in who offer you some kind of upside in those scenarios where you can have a shot from distance. Yeah, really fantastically hit. And I think a great player in that he like offers those two things that City have been really lacking so far this season, or for the most of the season, which is the ability to make runs in behind, to stretch defences and create space to possess the ball, but also the ability to pick the ball up deeper and run at defences as well, with the knowledge that he is able to make those shots from distance, which means that centre backs are caught in two minds, right? You don't want to give him that space, so you step up and that opens up space in behind for him to play his teammates in. So I've been really impressed with Omar Marmoush this season, and I think it's exactly what the City midfield needs, really. It needs freshening up. I think that it's been impressive how Guardiola has fixed a lot of the problems this season with, you know, De Bruyne, Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, Kovacic. Those players felt like the problem before January, and it felt like they solved that problem by bringing in younger players. But in the event, it's only really been Marmoush who's offered anything like an immediate solution there. And I think, yeah, it's been quite nice watching that, because I think it gives us a good sense that of what is possible when Guardiola has those more mobile players available to him, and how good his system can actually be. I think it's become pretty recherché to describe Pep's football as boring. But I think a lot of that has come down to the fact that this squad has aged out a bit, and I think people will be surprised at how good they look next season with a few younger legs in the team.
Yeah, just on that as well, we haven't seen a lot of Nico Gonzalez lately. He came on after the red card to basically tighten up that the centre of the midfield. It's interesting, isn't it, John, that City have basically gone with the older heads for the back end of this season, and for the good form that they've been in at the back end of this season. It's been all about basically getting as many players into the centre as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we've been saying, like, part of the reason why they've had to use fullbacks for width is because they've overloaded the middle. And it's been an interesting way of playing. But it's Pep Guardiola. I think people disrespect him. I understand why, because he's been around for ages. People want to believe that there's someone else out there who can sort of take on the mantle. And maybe that process is already changing, right? He's not going to be around forever. But I just think it's hugely impressive what he did this season to go through that process of you know, the team ultimately collapsing, reversing that collapse, and finding ways of solving what was happening on the pitch with the personnel he had at his disposal. You know, everyone makes the inevitable grumblings about, oh, you know, all he'll do is spend another £200 million and solve the problems. Yeah, they spent another £200 million, but they solved the problems with the players that they had.
Yeah,
right?
None of them have played.
Barely any of them have played. Yeah, with the exception of Marmoush. So, and that's just what he does. He's an incredible coach, and I think, you know, operates on a level where a lot of the things that he does that are good are difficult to be recognised by lay people. And so as a result, now he's just sort of he's just become a little bit too kind of inevitable that it's impossible for people to appreciate him for what he does. But I think this is up there with some of his most impressive season turnarounds. You know, I think it's remarkable what happened. And if Champions League football is guaranteed at the weekend, then he'll probably put that, you know, an FA Cup final, a Champions League spot guaranteed, when it looked like neither of those things would be possible. Still incredibly impressive.
Yeah, and Richard, he threw in Rodri back in there from the bench, which I was a little bit surprised about. The game was getting quite tetchy, and I was thinking the last thing you kind of want is a player who's coming back from an 8-month injury. But, you know, fair play.
Yeah, it was really nice to see him named on the team sheet. Sort of mind instantly flashes back to him saying, quite early on after being confirmed as being ruled out for the season, sort of saying his motivation and his aim was to be back before the end of it. And he's achieved that, which is really, really nice. And it was lovely on what was a celebratory evening anyway, to have an extra thing to lift the atmosphere. The way the stadium greeted him just when he stood up to warm up, the atmosphere and just sort of constant singing sort of really took off from there, which was really, really nice. And I guess, well, I don't know if that's part of the calculation in Pep's decision of bringing on just to give that nice feel for the end of it, maybe, but it certainly worked in that respect. And yeah, I mean, it was like there's going to be a risk of bringing him into any game because there's like things that we cannot possibly know at the moment, quite apart from bringing into a game that's getting a bit tetchy and physical. Like we can't know where his head's at. And, you know, he wouldn't be the first player to go into challenges a bit more gingerly on return from injury or for the psychology to sort of overtake the physicality of it all. But that didn't appear to be an issue last night. And so I guess as a relatively risk-free, I suppose it wasn't risk-free actually, wasn't it? The third goal was quite late, but I'll still go with relatively risk-free sort of testing ground. Probably quite a good one actually, because now he's come through 15 minutes of a bit of a battle.
Yeah. 90 minutes at Fulham and then every game ever for the rest of time. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, John, this is where you have to leave us. But we've got a substitute just warming up, so we'll get to them shortly. But for now, thank you very much for being part of this week's episode.
Thank you for having me on.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much. Now, with next week's episode being the live end of season show, it means the time has come to review the alternative highlights of the season. We did August to December at the turn of the new year, so it's time to take a look back at the bits you might have missed from January until now. Sadly, we've not been able to coordinate diaries, so KC could be with us for this one. So I've talked through the highlights with Kieran Murray. We started, as you do, by discussing Pep's saliva.
I was quite glad that somebody had found as much interest in the saliva behavior of Guardiola as I had, because I was always fascinated by how he managed to get each ball perfectly spherical and in the same shape and color each and every time. Like, it's like, do you remember those little golf ball chewing gums you used to get?
No,
oh,
I don't.
Fuck,
what
I
were these?
Do you know, sometimes you worry that like the cultural references are going to miss because maybe it was just an Irish thing, but I really thought golf ball chewing gums were a universal thing. They were like a fucking screwball size,
right?
But they had the like rough texture of a golf ball, and they looked golf ball esque. And then they were minty. They were like a kid's. Do you remember like penny chews and shit like that?
Yeah.
They were of that ilk. So they were perfectly round, but they had a little bit of a rough texture to it. So it looked a little bit like Pep's spitballs.
I bet they were a thing, and I bet I've missed them. Golf balls bubblegum. I've just Googled it. Treasure Island Sweets are selling them. Yeah, so they do exist. I've just never seen them. So, yeah. I can see exactly what you mean. They are globules of Pep's spit, aren't they?
And he loves the golf as well. Maybe it's a tribute.
Maybe it's a sign. We'll stick with Pep for the opening kind of batch of alternative highlights, because genuinely one of my favourite things that he's done is tell the autograph hunters off for basically he's still signing the things, but he's like, I'm doing this under duress. I know you're going to sell this. Go and do something more worthwhile with your life. You must have dreams. Go and do that. Go and do those things. Don't just hang around my apartment block for my autograph to sell it on eBay.
Don't come again. I want to tell you again. I know your faces.
Yeah.
Go to the school and prepare yourself, guys. You are age. You are young. You are young, guys. So don't be here. Waste your time.
Okay.
You want to live your life doing this? Or honestly?
No.
You want to do the rest of your life doing this?
No.
I used to be a chef before. Did you?
Let's continue to do it. Prepare better.
I got bored of it.
Prepare better. Fucking hell, man.
That was tremendous, because you could see he was a bit rough around the eyes, wasn't he? He was lacking a bit of sleep. It must have been right in the middle of the bad run, and then learning what we learned about his marital woes as well. You could just see he'd panda eyes, and he was spitting more than just globules of golf balls. So one of them said, he said something like, do you not have dreams? Do you not have dreams, guys? And then one of them went, yeah, I trained to be a chef. And Pep was like, well, get back to it. You need to fucking prepare. You need to fucking prepare.
But the best of it, the other best bit about that, there's like five of them and they're all young lads apart from one. He goes, you're all young. You're not. But like that, it's just, take a swipe at him.
He really took into that chef fellow particularly badly. And I suppose, that was it. When you look around them and they are young lads, and then you've got one this oldish fella, field chef. Maybe he just needed more of motivational pep talk.
Yeah, I wonder what he's up to now. I hope he's back in the kitchen now.
Somewhere. Oh, I hope so.
He's had a few press conference moments as well this season. The two that spring to mind, the first one is, we'll come to Haaland a bit later on and some of the things around him. But obviously with the Arsenal game, Miles Lewis-Skelly copied Haaland's celebration. And when Guardiola was asked about it in the press conference, he's like, oh, yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
But the best bit about that is as he's walking out, he turns to the press officer and says, "Did you like my answer?" It's like, yeah, all right. But then also with when they went to Leighton Orient, he kept calling Leighton Orient Leighton, because like you would. It's like you're not from the country. It's a natural thing to kind of assume.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United thing. You don't call that. You don't call either of them Sheffield.
Yeah.
They're Orient,
really
obviously.
Just for badness, like love saying Sheffield for Sheffield United.
Yeah, and he got told off by one of the journalists in the room who was a Leighton Orient fan, and his response was, "I'm so sorry for the people of this lovely stadium."
But it wasn't just that; it was the little sort of like eye roll, tongue out, like really, really, really sarcastic, and like punctuated with an eye roll as well, and a grimace. Just he's mental, isn't he? Like he's really, really, really funny in the things that get under his skin versus the things that should but don't. He's just like for somebody so kind of hard on his sleeve, he's a bit of a mystery, isn't he? He's so hard to read. Mm-hmm. I like a feel for Sam Lee and the journalists who talk to him all the time, because you just how can you read him? How can you get the measure of him? And how can you predict how he's going to react? You know, sometimes he'll take the piss and go with it. Sometimes he'll just like, you know, be outraged. It's just such a mad man.
Yeah. While we're on Haaland and his celebration, Sabrina Carpenter did it for some reason, not really sure why. And obviously Miles Lewis-Skelly doing it as well. Like the celebration, I can't remember the last time Haaland busted that out, you know.
No, there hasn't been, again, much reason to lately.
Not scored much, though,
has he? yeah, that could be it. I suppose that the funny thing about the Sabrina Carpenter one was, because it went sort of semi-viral, didn't it? And then Arsenal fans who'd sort of taken umbrage about the response to that Skelly celebration, because people were saying they haven't even won anything yet, and, you know, come back when you've done a trophy, and how can you get in Haaland's face about this? So some Arsenal fan had, like, sarcastically quote-tweeted that Sabrina Carpenter going, "She hasn't even won anything yet. Just like, yeah, come back to me, Sabrina, when you've got a Champions League," you know, all this stuff. Like it was quite funny, but yeah, it was great. I don't know whether it was, because
how does she know, like, about it? Yeah,
but Haaland didn't create that either, did he? Like isn't it like a meditation,
it's a yoga pose,
pose. So she could have been doing that completely incidentally to it all, but the Sabrina Carpenter Erling Braut Haaland collab we didn't expect for 24-25.
Yeah, he got Gabriel back though when obviously Arsenal, the whole stay humble thing has happened this season, which I'm a little bit on the side of, you know, the welcome to Manchester stuff with United.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit on the side of the Arsenal fans don't get what stay humble is.
I know, yeah.
Because again, look at the season that they've had, and look at like every time City lose, it's been a case of, well, maybe they should have been more humble, and it's kind of like, well, yeah, but they do have reason to like believe in themselves over the course of the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And Haaland's response to that was just, "Ah, well, you'd like one of these, wouldn't you?" And pointed to his gold badges and his Premier League on the Premier League shirt.
Yeah, that's all you need to be saying, isn't it? Really, like somebody, there's a tweet doing the rounds again from a couple of years ago, I think, and it sort of says, don't bother arguing with an Arsenal fan, just wait. and that is it. That's it's the perfect response, isn't it? Like, because as the season went on, you know, they're going to end up with just as many trophies as City, and Spurs could win the Europa League. So, like, imagine the season. I know we're recording it just before the final starts, but imagine the season it would be if Spurs finished, what, 16th or 17th or something but win a trophy. And Arsenal, after all this, against, you know, the stay humble stuff and thrash and City and all the actual looking like they were going to do something in the Champions League as well, and then finishing with absolutely nothing, but Spurs win a trophy. Fucking magnificent. All the more reason to want Spurs to win tonight, as if playing United wasn't enough.
Finally, with Haaland, his Snapchat stories have been fun. My favourite was he had the bald filter on and just says, might go bald.
Yeah. The students that I'm teaching are telling me more. I'm not on Snapchat anymore. I used to be on it. I used to quite like it, but I'm long gone off it. But apparently it's worth signing back up for Haaland, because he's unreal. he's been really good crack on there. But the highlight definitely might go bald as a poignant tribute to his manager, I suppose.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, is very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, but don't worry, it'll be over soon.
Let's talk about one of the new signings, because Kusunov has made quite the impression. There's a tweet about him from his debut against Chelsea, which just says, how do you get a graphic in 7 minutes?
That's amazing. What a tweet that is, but what a brilliant alternative moment of the season to his debut. Just mental, just nuts.
It's 7 minutes 53 on the clock. Yeah. And the graphic says Aboukadir Kusunov passes 6, unsuccessful passes 3, errors leading to goals 1, yellow cards 1. Nearly 8 minutes of debut.
Yeah. It was. We said then it was a reverse Mangala, because Mangala's debut against Chelsea was magnificent, and we thought we'd signed, you know, an all-timer, and then his follow-up game went the way of Kusunov, and then his career after that went the way of Kusunov's debut. But actually Kusunov had a dodgy debut and then ended up being really pretty good.
Yeah.
And then completely disappeared off the face of the earth, and nobody's seen him in months.
Yeah, Higgy talks about the way he smiles all the time. It doesn't seem to be very photogenic when he smiles.
No,
it looks like he's quite evil.
Yeah, it is quite unnerving, isn't it? Higgy likes doing the zoom in screenshot of his of his funny little smiles.
Yeah, two things from Kusunov as well. There was the game where he just turned up and didn't have a wash bag, and Pep was like, "Yeah, he didn't have a wash bag. He didn't even have a wash bag." That's kind of how committed he was to this. And it was kind of like, "So what? So he's what? Skimping shower gel in the showers? Is he the one that's like, "Oh yeah, can I borrow your shower gel? Oh yeah, you got a towel?" And it's like, "Mate, can you bring your own for once, please?"
Yeah.
And then there was that story that is obviously bollocks.
Yeah.
About him falling out with Pep because he'd said he tried to say you're a champ too, but said you're a shampoo, and Guardiola thought he was having a dig at him being bald. That's obviously bollocks.
It is obviously bollocks, right? But that is from the 19th of April, and it says at the end of it, Kusunov will not play again for City and is only making the bench to fill the numbers. His City career is over before it even begun. I actually don't think he has played since then.
His last appearance for City is on the 30th of March.
What? What?
It can't be true.
It's not true. But this,
this is Bob Mortimer on Would I Lie to You. It's obviously not true.
Yeah. Well, but it was tweeted out by Real Talk MCFC. So, with a name like that,
no,
you just never know.
It's not true. I'm not having it. It's true. It's not true.
I was telling a lie. Yeah, you're a champ. Pep told him, because Cousinot replied, "You're a shampoo." Due to the language barriers, he meant to say "you're a champ too." Apparently, Ruben Dias tried to intervene and explain the situation, as Cousinot finds English hard to speak, but Pep's had enough.
No.
That's not true. Like, but it's hilarious to think that the timelines do sort of match, and that we haven't seen him, and that a random tweet saying that it was an exclusive has put that out there. And where has he been? Nobody's really asking the question. Where has he been? Has everybody just accepted that you're a shampoo?
No, it didn't happen.
But it is Bull Mortimer-esque, because it's like too ridiculous to be made up as well, you know? Like, why? Like, of all the stories to make up, of all the mad, mad, mad lies to spin and gossip to spread, you've sent that on mid-April and he's not played since. Sam Lee should really, like, his next Athletic article should be the origins of that tweet, and speak to Pep, speak to Kucinov, speak to
work out what's
Diaz.
Happened.
Yeah.
No. Hopefully, when people hear this, your prediction earlier, because you have a habit, like one of my alternative highlights of this season is you having a habit of instantly dating anything that we're recording. So you've already mentioned that we are before the Europa League final. When people hear this, they will know who has won the Europa League. Hopefully, it is Tottenham, as you say.
Yeah. Do you remember we recorded stuff in the summer and I was going, yeah, I'm just sitting here watching the Olympics?
I was like, you were going to release it in November. Yeah. So, fantastic. Thanks for that. And you've done it in a way that I can't take it out. So, brilliant. Fantastic. So, with United and with the season that they've had, hopefully it is a case of they don't have a Champions League place next season. They haven't won the Europa League. If it is, sorry about that. But rhymes with Amorim. First off, one makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah,
rhymes with Amorim. Will City ever win again? Well, it doesn't rhyme. Yeah. So, like, let's crack on. And second, the duvet cover it's on.
I know. They have a nightmare every year, don't they? Because last year, wasn't it, nobody ever remembered the second man on the moon? Remember after we won the treble?
Yeah.
Nobody ever remembered the second man on the moon. Everybody was just like, it was fucking Buzz Aldrin. Everybody remembers. And then this year, rhymes with Amorim, will City ever win again? But the tweet... The tweet that we've got, nah, I'm finished. I thought it was red paint. There's an actual duvet cover though with flowers on. And it is. It's like a proper, like, your ma's duvet that you would have had when you were growing up. Real big, huge, like, pinky, purpley flowers on. Who has done that? And what were they thinking? And, like, I know, well, to date it again, they could win a trophy tonight and City haven't got anything at all and are, you know, still fighting for Champions League berth, but they're in, what, 16th in the league? Mm. And they're making duvet signs saying, will City ever win again? Like, what are you thinking about, lads? City went through a dodgy patch, but why would you put that on a duvet? It's asking for trouble. But then, if you're going to start it with rhymes with Amorim as well, just... It's the most, like, memeable, you know, come clap back to and throwback reference. Because all year we've just been having good fun with rhymes with Amorim and then saying something that doesn't really rhyme with Amorim. Like, if you search back on WhatsApp, it's just like rhymes with Amorim and then something shit that doesn't really rhyme with Amorim.
let's run through some kind of non that like standouts that are kind of not connected to each other. So just like general miscellaneous highlights of the season. Far be it from me to be going in on other online content creators. But I think Mark Goldbridge is a fair enough target. Liam Gallagher's response to Mark Goldbridge, 4 words. I'm going to get the bleeper out because he said, "Shut up, you."
That was lovely, a really, really nicely delivered there as well. It's sad that it's going to be bleeped out. So it was in reply to Haaland, what a prat, sold his whole career away for money at a soulless club, and I'd forget City getting done. Clearly, no, they aren't. Spent 10. Oh, this is off the back of him getting a 10 year contract, is it?
Yeah.
Spent 10 years spending like no one else can. How is that fair? Shut up, you.
Just cut straight to the nub of the problem.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the signings as well, because City put out a homage to that great Mancini signing picture where he's in the stand with, I should have checked the players, but it's certainly Jerome Boateng. I want to say Alexander Kolarov was
Kolarov there.
Yaya Toure.
Yeah. Must be Yaya. David Silva. Silver,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it was drawn. It was animated, and we've got Kusunov, Vitor Reich, Marmoush, and Nico as the four players with Pep behind them. And it's just like it is in exactly the same mould. And just looking at even Kusunov's smile in that is unnerving.
Yeah, the rest of them all. Yeah, it is. It's a little like I'm gonna kill you. It's like he's thinking about in his head saying to Pep, you're a shampoo.
Didn't happen.
Speaking on the tip of his tongue.
Yeah, speaking of shampoo, was it the Real Madrid fan or was it a City fan getting a haircut in the stands?
Oh, I don't think it was a City fan. oh my God, that is kind of one of the death nails of the game. That. It is objectively very funny that it's happened, but can you believe that sort of thing is happening? And on Champions League nights and fans of other clubs coming in and doing haircuts in the stands. That is, what could you ever imagine football getting to that? Like, what has become of it? The game has gone.
Yeah, go to the football, watch a game, short back and sides as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to know the motivation behind that or what the background and context of that story was, because, like...
There's an athletic long read for you.
Yeah, yeah. Mix that in. They're all hair-related, aren't they? So maybe that should be the feature over the summer.
The theme, yeah.
The theme
of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's speed through a couple more. Real Madrid tie didn't have a lot to celebrate, but was Nico Gonzalez absolutely wedgieing the fuck out of Vinicius Jr.
Yeah, always nice to see. I suppose it's sort of a bit of an alternative moment as well to think about Rodri taking a photo of the big banner. And then City getting really, really kind of humbled over those two legs by Madrid again, you know. So there wasn't you're right much to celebrate, but nice to see Vinny Jr. With his shorts up his hole.
Yeah, you are aware as well that U.S. President Donald Trump knows who City are and that they are one of the favourites for the Club World Cup, thanks to Gianni Infantino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely mad exchange.
Mad.
I genuinely wonder if that's the first time the phrase Manchester City has ever been uttered in the White House.
Yeah. That's what freaked me out about it. And so he says, who are the favourites? And he says, Real Madrid. And then he says, City straight away, second, like Manchester City. And then he was Bayern Munich, PSG. And then Trump says something along the lines of, yeah, it's always the same teams. They're always mentioned. It's just like, what the fuck? How is this happening? Like, just, it's been surreal, hasn't it, this season?
Mm.
Like, especially in terms of the game's gone moments. You know, like that haircut and like Trump hearing about it. The more and more global the club get or you know, football gets, the more and more mental it all. You know, it's really hard to, like, get your head around it all.
And yet... Neil Warnock loves City.
Yeah.
Guardiola loves Neil Warnock, and Haaland loves Neil Warnock as well. Like, where's the Neil Warnock loving come from?
Yeah, I know. See, that's also surreal, but in a more grounded, old
English
City.
English football way.
English football, this is very funny. It's a bit like, It's a bit like Pep has said to Warnock, you know, feel free to come around any time, and he took it literally.
Yeah, they're all at the CFA kind of like looking through the curtains going, oh God, he's here again. Like, yeah, nobody move. Yeah. No, just get down. Nobody move.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And he's overstaying his welcome, but they all kind of ironically love him still. So, yeah, how could you not love Warnock? Do you know where I think that might stem from? Is the, do you remember the video somebody put side by side of Warnock and Pep coaching?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, Matt, you've surely seen it. It's amazing. It's like the two of them are as mad as each other, but in really different, you know, ways. You've got this sort of like glamorous cosmopolitan overthinking coach, and then you've got Warnock going, go out there and do it. But
you're going to fucking die to get 3 points.
Yeah. He's like, go out there and enjoy it, but enjoy it by being fucking disciplined. You know, that sort of stuff. Like, and then you've got Pep, kind of from the All or Nothing documentary, you know, like bouncing up and down the change room. Like, so, yeah, I wonder, did somebody like juxtapose them and then they actually realised that they had a bit in common, and you know, it was a nice little funny irony to see them together. But, yeah, didn't he say that Haaland ran up to him and gave him a big hug and he thought he was like, he was shouting at him or something, and he thought he was shouting at the person behind him, and then he realised it was him that Haaland was coming for him. Like,
yeah, Haaland was like, can I get a picture? Can I get a picture? And Warnock was like, hang on, shouldn't it be me asking you?
Yeah.
Incredible stuff.
Brilliant alternative moment last night, actually, in the Bournemouth game that obviously we haven't had time to talk about, where De Bruyne missed that golden opportunity, and then you could see his wife in the stands watching it on her phone, and the kid, I think, is it Mason? They're showing on the phone the miss by De Bruyne. So his wife and kid are laughing at him, like looking at the miss, like with despair in the crowd. It's really, really tragic and sad that his final match ended with that image. Like,
incredible. I've saved the best till last, Kieran, because
absolutely.
The tweets for that goes with this. Is rather simply, obviously we talked about this happening previously, but the tweet that accompanies this is, babe, wake up, new Spanish commentary song has dropped. Because we previously talked about the De Bruyne song by this commentator. And then this is from when Josko Gvardiol scored in the FA Cup semi-final to make it 2-0. This is how it was covered on ESPN Argentina. There you
amazing.
Go. But I've got a bit of a present for you, because his name is Bambino Pons. He works for ESPN Argentina. I messaged a friend of mine who works at ESPN just to see if we could get in touch with him. And he sent us this.
Sorry,
no.
I do not speak in English. It's in Spanish for you. Blue Moon. Quickly, hurry up the blue moon.
And then the next voice note that I got was this.
Hello, guys. I speak English more or less. Kevin De Bruyne, for you, for blue moon, this goal. De Bruyne, goal! El gol para el City.
Yes!
Fue Kevin De Bruyne. El gol para el City de Kevin De Bruyne. Kevin, 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 Kevin. El gol para el City. Kevin De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne. City 1, Liverpool 0. Lo hizo Kevin De Bruyne. City le está ganando al Crystal Palace cuando perdía 2-0. 5-2.
There you go.
Oh my God. Oh,
I was
my
I originally
God.
Wanted him I originally wanted to speak to him for the podcast, but then he basically was saying I don't speak English. And so I messaged him. I actually asked him if he would sing a song for Blue Moon Podcast. He's taken that to mean, will he sing a Kevin De Bruyne song for us? I actually wanted him to sing a song that had Blue Moon Podcast in it, but I'm not splitting hairs. I got a voice note off the commentator that sang those songs.
My days. This is like a bucket list moment. I'm starstruck as fuck here. Like,
the best bit is, if you like, he's called Bambino Pons. If you search his name on YouTube, There's a plethora of them. He does it all the time. Right. So, like, it's not just City. It's like it's pretty much any goal that goes in. He sings a song about the scorer. It's fantastic.
He seems to love British 60s rock because he's gone from 8 days a week and then he's gone Miss You by the Rolling Stones of all fucking songs. I asked my mate Andy, who's pretty multilingual. I sent him that video of the Gwariol song. Because you know how he goes, and then he says something that's got, like, kind of hard to translate. I said, what's he said? And he replied saying, he's saying it was a Croatian. So the song goes, it was a Croatian. Then Andy followed up in the message with, he also says, goal!
Good to clear that up. There's one for 93-20 as well. He did it. On the 93-20 goal.
No way.
Yeah, you have to. The quality wasn't good enough for me to take it and use it in this. But go and search for it because it is there. It's fantastic.
I can't wait to hear what song he chooses. that is incredible. What a brilliant end to a rather patchy and difficult season at times.
Yeah. Bambino Pons, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bambino.
I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Kieran Murray with me for the alternative highlights for the second half of the season. As I mentioned before, next week is the live podcast and tickets are on sale now. It's just £5 for your ticket and all of the profits are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. It's at Idle Hands on Dale Street in Manchester on Tuesday the 27th of May. We begin at about 8 o'clock, doors will open at about 7:30 and the former City captain Paul Lake is our special guest. If you want tickets, head over to tickets.bluemoonpodcast.com. That's tickets.bluemoonpodcast.com. Now, we promised a sub, and we're now joined by Adam Carter from statcity.co.uk. Hello, Adam.
Yep, fresh legs.
Fresh legs. Give us a little bit of impetus for the second half. I mean, Adam, we'll start with you, because looking at the table and looking at the situation for this Fulham game, 5-3 doesn't go. Well, I mean, it does go, but you have a remainder of two, and those two won't qualify for the Europa League, or will qualify for either Europa League or Conference League. But that's not quite as snappy as 5-3 doesn't go. You're the numbers guy. I'll leave that to you. How are you feeling about the fight for the top fiver?
I was feeling on top of the world last night, and then the closer it gets to the next game, you then... thinking of all the permutations that could go against us in typical pessimistic City way. We should have one foot in the qualification criteria, but I'm still, you know, a lot can go wrong, can't it? So if you'd asked me last night, immediately after the Bournemouth game, I'd have said, yeah, you know, top of the world, we'll easy do it. And then as the hours creep on, I'm now just nervous and I'm looking at all the permutations. I'm like, if we lose, what needs to happen for and I'm working out all the kind of combinations that could still see us through, but just avoid defeat and we're there.
Yeah, this is it's that thing of, yeah, we've got a 4-0 lead from the first leg and it's like we'll breeze through this. And then at kickoff you're like, well, the only option here is that we're going to lose 5-0. It doesn't work like that, but you know, I get the sentiment. Yeah. Richard, it helps, I guess, that Chelsea play Forest because City will have to finish above one of them. Elsewhere, Newcastle in fourth, they host Everton. Chelsea, as I say, fifth, go to Forest in seventh.
Villa
in sixth.
Villa have got a bye.
Yeah, they've got United. If City draw, Villa need a 16-goal swing for to pass City. So
is that all?
I mean, yeah. They're going to Old Trafford. It's on.
Excellent. I don't want to answer anything. I just want to enjoy the moment. it's like I say. I mean that Forest Chelsea fixture does fall favourably for City. I did find myself wondering, and probably could have checked. I wonder how many times across the course of the season, so many of the from that group of teams would have all picked up 3 points anyway on the same weekend. Like probably doesn't happen because the nature of being in this part of the league is relatively inconsistent, and you know, drop plenty of points along the way.
I mean, I feel like an absolute moron because about 6 weeks ago, I did a feature for the podcast about how City were in a good position to qualify for the Champions League, because actually you can afford to drop points in these sorts of run-ins because the teams around you will be doing that. And when you think of City's previous battles for the top four in like 2009-10, in 15-16, they were just wildly inconsistent seasons. And then from then on in, City have like won most of the games, drawn a couple of them, and still it's not secure on the final day. I thought they needed like two wins and two draws and they'd do it.
Yeah, it's inconsistent taking over a season, but like I suppose the nature of being like you're still one of the top five teams in the country, and so really like the inconsistent positions are mid-table. Like that's the ones where you are most inconsistent, and that's where you find teams saying, "Oh, if we were just a bit more inconsistent," and it's like, "Well, sorry." No, they don't. As if we were just a bit more consistent. It's like, well, yeah, but that's what everybody's striving for. Because, like, you know, the more consistent you are in a positive way, the more successful you are. And then obviously at the very top ends and very bottom ends, you get super consistent teams. None more consistent than Southampton anywhere in the country, I'd imagine. and so, like, City being in the part of the table that they are, they are still fairly... There are bound to be spells of consistency in the season. Like, you can't be in the top five without at some point having a pretty good run of form. And for us, it's a perception shift, isn't it? Our version of consistency over the last four or five seasons is that we win the vast majority of the games we play. We don't drop many points. And that becomes heightened to like an insane level in this run-in of the season. We've got a version of that this year. We've had a season where we don't put, like, clearly don't put the level of back-to-back wins that we've had in previous seasons. We've had a spell in this season where we've been consistent in all the wrong ways. And then we've addressed a lot of the problems and become consistent in a positive way. All of which is to say, I think it's to be expected that teams in this area of the league would have a consistent spell, and if you want to do anything positive, then you've got to be able to handle your running. So it probably shouldn't be a surprise that a lot of the teams in this area of the league have won a lot of games at the end of the season, and the ones who look most like dropping out are the ones that sort of were consistent for ages, and then when the heat is on, reverted to type a little bit. And that's not in any way a criticism of Forest, who, wherever they finish, is clearly some way above where they would have expected at the start of the season. I think I've gone a long way about the houses there, but that's at least consistent with my usual approach. So.
Yeah. Adam, are you nervous?
You know that. I too was part of that feature that we did a few weeks back, and I think we've only dropped points against United and Southampton since then. And it's almost like a really miniature version of, you know, those run-ins with Liverpool where you drew in January and you thought the season was over.
Yeah.
We've drawn against Southampton and I'm like, we've not done enough. Like,
I tell you what, though, if they'd scored it, it'd be done now.
Yeah. And I was also walking away from the ground last night thinking, oh, that one goal that Bournemouth scored last night in the 96th minute, if we miss out on one goal difference, it's that goal. And, you know, all these permutations.
Villa would have needed 17,
yeah,
wouldn't they? Yeah,
exactly. And that might have been a challenge against United, but 16, it's a tap-in. So the nerves are there. I am glad, if you, in a weird sadistic way as well, though, if you'd have told me 3 months ago that I'd have been to Wembley 3 times this season and I'd have something to play for on the last day of the season. Yes, it's not normal City standards or recent City standards, but there's still something to play for. There's still some jeopardy. There's still jeopardy. There's some still feeling alive about watching City play rather than just nothing to play for. Season over in February, just waiting for the next season to start. We've actually got some feeling about our games and some jeopardy, like I say. So the nerves are there. I think that's a good thing.
Makes you feel alive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I don't think it's going to be an easy. I put a poll on X, formerly Twitter, which was the trickier fixture out of Bournemouth and Fulham, and the Fulham fixture came out on top. So I think a few Blues are expecting a nervy game as well.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the setup as well, Richard, because we talked a lot about the midfield. Kovacic is suspended for this one. So how does that affect the shape of the team for this one? Can you just see a straight swap of Nico Gonzalez coming in, especially given he scored at against Bournemouth?
Yes, I can. And
or is that gap Rodri shaped?
Well, I was just thinking that surely it's too much to start him at the moment. The lad's played 15 minutes of football since September, and there's got to be surely a still wrap him in cotton wool type element to it, at least protect, not completely wrap him in cotton wool, otherwise you just wouldn't play him, would you? But there's still got to be an element of like feeling his way back into it and getting the match sharpness back, surely. I think it'd be such a huge risk to start him. Although I'm sure I'd still be giddy if I saw his name on the team sheet. So, you know, if we go off vibes, Rodri can start.
If we're going off vibes, Haaland not to start?
I mean, well, there's a separate conversation. to answer your question, I think Nico into midfield strikes me as making perfect sense. I always caveat this with, I never feel up to speed on tactical questions. There's probably a whole host of things that could happen that I'm not considering that would you bring somebody else in and completely change the shape of the team in a more effective way. But I would be satisfied with it, would be my answer. He's clearly a good player. The only thing that makes me doubt that is Pep has done what he always does and found a trusted team for the running and largely stuck to it. Obviously not the exact same 11 for the last few games, but by and large, trusted team. But then, you know, Kovacic comes out of that and he's forced to make a decision. So I would bet Nico. Haaland, what a question. I mean, he'll start, won't he?
Yeah, but, he'll play the same team as last night, I reckon, but with the swap that you've mentioned there. I think Kovacic being sent off makes it more probable that De Bruyne or Rodri make an appearance. I think De Bruyne will start, but the fact that Kovacic is now suspended makes it more probable that Rodri will make an appearance in the game at some point. I agree it might come too soon for a start, but then if he's... Is it one of those that if he's fit enough to be on the bench, he's fit enough to start? And are we just kind of being overly cautious because we know how precarious the situation could be after 8 months out? But he's been doing a lot of work in the background that should make him match fit. And we might just be, you know, walking on eggshells with him, worried that something else is going to go. I was watching him intently for the 14 minutes he was on last night, just watching every time he landed, every time he twisted, every time he turned. And he looked fine. He looked like he was even... involved in bumping Kevin De Bruyne, so he was well in for all that. I thought he might skirt around the celebrations and whatnot, but I think he's up for it. And I think, like I say, with Kovacic not being there, it's more probable that we'll see him more so than we might have imagined 24 hours ago.
Yeah. Right, well, for one final time this season, we've got the chance to add some money to the kitty for the charity bet. We're on £1,365 for the season so far. It's our best ever season, so let's try and finish it with a bit of a flourish. William Hill is giving us each a £10 correct score single, and the winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, and it is time for Fulham away. I'm going to kick us off. I'm going for a 2-1 City win. That is 7-1 and £70. Adam, what are you having?
1-0, and I'd love it to be De Bruyne.
1-0 De Bruyne. Oh, we don't put on the first goal scorer, so that we don't go that specific. But 1-0 is 17-2 and £85. Richard,
City to win 3-1.
3-1 City is 11-1 and £110 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, visit begambleaware.org. Adam, I rather cruelly didn't let you pick the jingle last time. And it's the final time for this season that we'll hear a listener's question jingle from Higgy.
Number one.
So you want, which one do you want? Number one. Okay, let's go for it.
I want it as my ringtone.
Excellent. Here we go.
It's the listeners' questions. It's the listeners' questions. Don't be giving us lots of flannel or suggesting it's Ask the Panel, because it's not called that. All right. It's called It's the Listener's Questions. Make it thoughtful or inventive. Try to provide an answer incentive. It's the Listener's Questions. Thank you.
Thank you indeed. Blue Skyers at bluemoonpodcast.com on there. You can email contact at bluemoonpodcast.com as well. We will start with this from Lynn on the emails, who says, after seeing the send-off that De Bruyne got and similar for previous club legends, I can't help but feel it's a shame that other players who deserve the same sort of appreciation might not get it. There's a real chance that players like John Stones or Bernardo Silva leave this summer too. How could the club honour their contributions? And Adam, it's a fair point. Because if you take someone like John Stones, who has, you know, he's only had one season less than De Bruyne has at City, he's contributed a hell of a lot. That 2023 run-in was down to Guardiola finding a way to get John Stones in a free role from centre-back and from right-back. And yet he doesn't get the on-the-pitch send-off because he's injured and he's not been in the team. And we don't actually know whether this will be his last season or not. There's a lot of uncertainty there. There's nothing the club can do, but it kind of feels wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing last night as well. I tweeted saying, we're probably saying goodbye to a lot more people than we realise at the moment last night with that. It's a shame that testimonials aren't really a thing anymore, because we'd have about five of them queuing up. I even think back to players like Mahrez, who went out the back door, really. I know they didn't have as lasting impression, as lasting legacy as some of the legends that we've been lucky enough to say goodbye to. But there have been some that will just slip out the back door. And it's purely logistics. It's purely the decisions that need to be made further down the line and can't be made today. I think the added complexity of having a Club World Cup in the middle of the summer as well, where this season is going to blur into next season, there's extended contracts just for the duration of that competition and stuff, will blur the lines. And it's just it is a real shame. I think I listened to your episode of Let Me Talk, where Sam Lee suggested some kind of All-Stars game to get everyone back in the same room and have the same congratulations, celebrations and adoration for one last time. But obviously the logistics that even go into that, planning that, would be mad. But it is such a shame. But I think that it's a bigger problem, because City have got to doing these farewells really well. They've got them nailed down now. It's the light show. It's the lifetime season ticket. It's the club shirt. It's the video montage. It's, you know, it's the everyone staying around after the end of the game. So it's noticeable for those that don't get it now, because you think how many players have just left City over the years that don't even get a video goodbye message. You know, Sean Wright Phillips never got anything like this when he left in the first few times. So it's something that we've really got adept to. Now we're losing a legend a season on average. And I think that's what heightens how much of a shame it is for those ones that do slip out. Like Gundogan didn't get one the first time round. You know,
Company didn't get one.
I think that was very much his choice, because he knew on his wave of the lap of honour, but no one else did at that point. So I think that one was more his choice. But yeah, if anyone should have got one over that 10-year period, it's probably Company. So I think it just highlights, because we do it so well, that it's more of a shame for those that don't get it.
For me, I had the same thought. I had a sort of running joke with the lad I sat next to last night, with sort of every substitution that we made, I was sort of like overlaying the announcement with, and coming on for his last ever Etihad appearance. You know, like it's, and I think I just try and like flip it on its head, because you can almost like get quite regretful that so many of these players won't get the kind of send-off that they deserve. But there's a reason that send-offs like last night are the exception, because, and please don't misinterpret this, I would love if the likes of John Stones could be given, John Stones is in my top five favourite ever City players for loads more reasons than just how good at football he is. And it'd be great to think that he'll leave with the kind of fanfare that we saw last night and everybody belting out his song and seeing how loved he is by the City fans and all that. But I think he's spent his career at City having his name belted out, and I think he's probably got a sense of how, of the adoration that he's got. And I'd like to think that he's probably got a sense of where he sits in City history. He knows what he's achieved, and the trophies speak for themselves. And you sort of have to hang on to being able to reserve things like De Bruyne's farewell for being the exception. Like most people just don't get to experience that. Most players don't get to experience that. And De Bruyne goes as arguably and quite probably City's best ever player. And so, you know, I'm not saying that it wouldn't be amazing to do that for Edison, Bernardo, John Stones. We did it for Zabaleta, who is an icon, but not one of the best ever. He's one of the most beloved, but you couldn't realistically say he's one of City's best ever players. So I just reason it the other way. You can't do it for everyone, and so you just have to enjoy it when you can. Because then you can get into, like, David Silva didn't get one because of lockdown, and that's heartbreaking. Aguero's was... it was very good, but it was muted because there was only 10,000 people there. You just have to be thankful for what you are able to express to these people who have meant so much to us. And we were able to do it for De Bruyne, and we can be thankful for that. It's a shame we can't do it for everyone.
Just on De Bruyne, Adam, the last of the pre-Guardiola era players has now made his final ever Etihad appearance. Quite notably, Richard always talks about how City were giving players the number of appearances on the back of a shirt, and they didn't do that for De Bruyne, which suggests he'll probably play against Fulham. In terms of the overall send-off, and you said about how good City have got it down to a T now and how they're able to do it. It's notable as well, I think, that when you watch De Bruyne speak in that, and when he's on the pitch, he is a man that doesn't show his emotions like that often. He's quite distant from that sort of thing. He gets angry on the pitch, but then he's over it quite quickly, and he gets quite animated about things like that. But the fact that he couldn't speak, it just kind of summed up how he was feeling, how the entire stadium was feeling, and it's almost like the passage of time has been cruel to us all, because we blinked and then suddenly it's over.
Yeah. So all those emotions came back. So De Bruyne, I've probably on the City website, on your profile, you can choose who your favourite player is. And mine's been set for De Bruyne ever since he came. So that's how kind of fond I was of him. But the one thing that didn't endear me to him was his persona off the pitch. He's got no obligation to be nice and funny and sentimental. He's here to play football. So the fact that we then saw that last night, we always almost came full circle in what he means to us. And I was able to experience it with my daughter last night. I took her to the game, and she was 2 when he arrived. So she's not known anything but De Bruyne in our team. So that was just a lovely moment. So I've seen her grow up. I even remember De Bruyne's kids being presented on the pitch when they were absolutely babies, and seeing them grow up on the... Obviously, don't profess to know them at all, but the passage of time is demonstrated by the different kits that he's wearing, the ages of our children when they're growing up alongside these players who've been here for... And he looked like a boy when he joined, and he's leaving a man, and that journey has been evidenced through video montages from your own memories that you can pin alongside. And I think we're getting to the end of these 10-year players now. I don't think we'll see him anymore. I think Bernardo and Foden are probably the only two we'll ever see as a 10-year cycle player now in the modern game. You don't get 10-year managers. These 10-year players, apart from Haaland, but I don't think he'll see out the... I think there may be some politics around the length of that contract, but that's for another discussion.
Oh, is that 115? Is that 115, chat? We got this far without it.
I've ruined everything I've just said, haven't I? But yeah, it was lovely to be able to pin that sentiment against my own personal sentiment and everyone around me who stayed to enjoy it as well, because it was a week night, it was late, so that needs to be commended. I know some supporters clubs were still taking their coaches away at the normal time, so people were finding alternative arrangements to stay there last night, which should be commended, because it's not been the great season and we still stayed to champion a club legend. So I think the overall atmosphere was spot on last night as well, the emotion and the sentiment.
Yeah, Richard, it's that passage of time thing, isn't it, that I think really gets to you, because you get the sense, and from the way he's spoken in the last few weeks, De Bruyne doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to go. And the harsh reality of football is City do need to build a team that doesn't involve him, because like they can't rely on him forever. And I think it's probably fair to say the season he's had is below par for what he normally is able to deliver. Maybe he could achieve better again next season, maybe not, we don't know, and the decision is he's going to be moved on. You can kind of see that sense of melancholy when he says things like, you know, I didn't expect to do a decade. It's almost like like what he's saying there is, Christ, I've done a decade. Like, I've been here for 10 years. I didn't, it's, where's that time gone?
Yeah, it's, I think back quite a lot to something that Pep said right at the start of his City tenure, when he spoke about, it might have even been his opening presentation, and he spoke about how, like, first and foremost, football has to make you feel something. And for all the medals he's got, and clearly Pep cares a lot about medals, but if it doesn't make you feel something, then it doesn't mean anything. And De Bruyne is just the absolute epitome of that. Like, there's a, for all that you can analyse what he can do technically, and we can speak about all day, he can strike a ball with both feet, he can, I describe him as like the thing that most amazes me about De Bruyne is he's just relentlessly efficient. So if the most efficient way for the team to get a goal is to smash it in from 30 yards, that's what he's going to try and do. If the quickest way he sees to goal is there's a pass that's on that's through six players' legs and it's going to land on Leroy Sané's toes for a tap-in, then that's what I'm going to try and do. And but more than that, the feeling of watching him parade around the pitch for City, full-hearted, pink-faced, tying his laces and you know that something's coming, strutting, like that sort of confirmation bias that I get of, like, in my head, there's a mode that De Bruyne goes into where you know he's decided City aren't losing. And in my head, we always won those games. And evidently that's not true, because we lost games that De Bruyne played. But it's that feeling of, I can go today and there's going to be something to enjoy.
Yeah.
Because De Bruyne is going to get the ball. And he might have a good game, but there's going to be an anticipation that I feel, because he's going to try something. And to think that we've had that for 10 years, and this sounds like a very, very easy thing to say, now it's over. But this is something that I've felt right, very keenly right through Pep's era, and I've felt it most keenly about De Bruyne. I've had a very real sense, and I think I've said it quite a few times, there's a point watching this where you just have to try and savour it, because this is our golden era.
Yeah, it may never be the same again.
After
to the point of like that Bournemouth game with De Bruyne leaving, that could be it. Could be the peak that it will ever be.
Absolutely. And what City have achieved, as City fans, we can appreciate, like, the treble is, we're only the second team to have done it in the history of English football, and it's the first time it's happened for us. We're the only team to have got 100 points. We're the only team to have done the domestic treble. We're the only team to have won four in a row. Like, these are unique things that have never happened before. So it's quite reasonable to think that outside of these era, it's going to be some time before they happen for anybody again, never mind coming back to City. Mm-hmm. We'll still be, like, circumstances dictate, we will still be more than likely, charges pending, all that, we will more than likely continue to be one of the teams at the upper end of English football. But to be this good, whichever version of this City is your favourite, whether it's gung-ho, Sterling, Sane, whether it's ultimate control, treble season, they've all got De Bruyne at the heart of them. Mm-hmm. And so I have had a very conscious sense of just try and take this in. Because one day it's just going to be your memories. It's not going to be your present. This will be the stuff that I talk to my son about, like my dad spoke to me about Bowley and Summerby. Like, that's an incredible thing. And just to think on that, that somebody has given you that just by kicking a football and tapped into whatever it is that all makes you feel. We all connect with it in some way, don't we? And that's just, it's a beautiful thing. And I can't remember what you asked, David. But
doesn't matter though now, does it?
Hopefully I've answered it.
I'm crying again.
Yeah. Right, so that's it for today's Blooming Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests for this one. Richard Burns.
Thank you, David.
And Adam Carter.
Always a pleasure.
and also not forgetting John McKenzie from earlier on too. Don't forget to get your tickets for the live show now. The £5 with all the profits going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. So Idle Hands in Manchester on Tuesday the 27th of May. Doors opening at about 7:30. Head over to tickets.bluemoonpodcast.com. There's also a clip coming up of this week's Nostalgia episode. That was City fans Niall Taylor and Adam Monk picking out their top 10 chips, dinks and lobs. The full thing is available now from patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast. It's the live show next. We'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
If you've never seen this goal, go and find it, because it's it's one of the most fucked up goals I've ever seen on a football pitch. I mean, firstly, City are awful this season, and Forest are, I think, they go up as champions, and they're by far just the best team in the league. And it's a few weeks into the season, and City win 3-1. But this goal comes from Jed Brannan, who, again, was not a good player. He's sort of going through one-on-one, and he's about, I'd say, 35, 40 yards out, and Forrest's keeper comes out, and they sort of collide in what can only be described as a horror tackle from both sides. Referee doesn't give anything. Brannan sort of stands up, swings his left foot with his back to goal.
Twirls and falls over in the process.
And the ball bounces on the line into the net after it dropped from about, I don't know, 100 feet. It's absolutely insane. I don't know if it's a lob. I have no idea what you'd call that. I'd just call it a fuck-up.
He kind of shanked it, didn't he? Like, he's half... Yeah. I don't even know if you could say he hit that true. He just hit it into the sky and it sort of just lobbed. It's like it's been dropped from the top of a crane or something.
I think he was trying to pass it back to the keeper.
Yeah.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.